So what do they tell us about living the Dharma life after the Buddha has gone? Well, I'd like to explore this question by looking at one of the stories in a collection of avadanas called the Divya Avadana. It's also, funnily enough, actually in a short version in the Pali canon, and also in a slightly longer version in the Pali commentaries. But it's told with more gusto, I think, in the avadanas. So Purna lived in Shronaparantaka. And Shronaparantaka, which is not the easiest place to say, is they think it was a region in the west coast, on the west coast of India, fairly near, just outside Mumbai, present-day Mumbai. So Purna lived in Shronaparantaka, and he lived a hard life. He was the son of a slave girl, and that's got a whole story in itself, but I'm going to skip that. But just suffice to say, through his own merit, he became a rich merchant. And one day he was sailing on his merchant ship with some merchants from Shravasti. And as the night turned to dawn and the first rays of the sun appeared on the horizon, the merchants from Shravasti started to recite the Buddhist scriptures, and reciting them not, you know, in a tune, almost like they were singing the Buddhist scriptures. So they were sitting on the ship as the sun was rising, chanting the Udana, chanting the Terragata, chanting the Terigata, chanting the Munigata. And Purna was deeply moved. It was very, very beautiful. And his soul stirred. He said to the merchants, "You sing the most beautiful songs." And the merchants turned to him and smiled and they said, "These aren't songs. They're not songs. These are the words of the Buddha." And the word Buddha, Purna had never heard the word Buddha. And as that word was spoken, goosebumps broke all over him. And it was as if a cool breeze was dancing on his skin. "Who is the one called Buddha?" he asked. So the merchants told him about the Buddha who was on retreat in Shravasti. On his return to Shronaparantaka, Purna said goodbye to his family. He asked permission to go forth into the homeless life and to find the Buddha, and his family gave their permission. He took one servant and set off for Shravasti. And once he came to Shravasti, Anathapindika, the famous lay follower of the Buddha, came across him and thought, well, there's this mighty, you know, he had a good reputation, Purna, for having a lot of money and being a great success. And Anathapindika thought, what's Purna come to here for? And why has he come on foot? Has he run out of money all of a sudden? And Purna says, no, I've come here because I'd like to take refuge with the Buddha. So Anathapindika takes him to see the Buddha, and one can only imagine what was happening in Purna's mind. He'd been travelling all that way from present-day Mumbai all the way to Shravasti, and I've made that journey by train, and it took, I think, 52 hours on that train. So I know it's a long way. That train wasn't going much faster than walking pace, but I think it probably took Purna a little longer. So he comes there and he comes into the Jeta Grove, and there, seated in silence, in harmony, in this beautiful peace, in this beautiful place, underneath the trees, was the Buddha, surrounded by hundreds of monks, all in silence, with this great atmosphere of vibrating peace and calm. And the Buddha turns to Ananda and he says, that monk sees Anathapindika coming, and he brings a gift. For the Tathagata, there is no gift that compares with the gift of a new disciple. And so it was. Purna saluted the Buddha, asked for ordination, and the Buddha replied, "Come, O monk, follow the holy life." And as soon as the Buddha had finished speaking, there Purna stood, head shaved, in robes, with a bowl and a week's growth of hair and beard, with the disciplined deportment of a monk who had been ordained for 100 years. So the Buddha taught Purna the Dharma, and Purna asked for a brief teaching that he could learn and memorize because he was going to leave. Brunner wanted to return to Shravanaparantika to spread the Dharma. Now, Shravanaparantika was a rough old place. And the people there were fierce, violent, cruel, abusive, scornful, and insulting, as we are told in the text. And the Buddha, obviously, is somewhat concerned about Purna, his new disciple. He says, well, how are you going to live in Shravanaparantika? What will you think when people abuse and insult you to your face with harsh and wicked lies? And Purna turns around and he says, well, I will think they are virtuous. I will think they are loving. At least they don't attack me with their hands or with clumps of dirt. And the Buddha says, okay, well, what will you think if they do attack you with their hands and clumps of dirt? And Purna says, well, I will think they are virtuous. I will think they are loving. At least they don't attack me with clubs or swords. So the Buddha turns around and says, well, very good, Purna, but what will you think if they do attack you with clubs and swords? And Purna replies, well, I will think they are virtuous. I will think they are loving. At least they don't kill me. And the Buddha replies, well, very good, Purna. But what will you think if they do kill you? One would think, maybe you wouldn't think anything if they kill me, you know. And Purna replies, well, I will think they are virtuous. I will think they are loving. With little pain, they will liberate me from this stinking body. So, I think just to say, this is slightly meant to be a joke. There are jokes in early Buddhist Sanskrit literature, and actually that story is in the Pali Canon. But I kind of feel a resonance with Purna here, because we too have to leave the Buddha, and we too have to go out into the world to spread the Dharma. A land without the Buddha's presence, where people can be insulting to your face, and abusive and scornful, and even violent. And how does Purna deal with this? Well, as I said, firstly, I do think it's meant to be funny. I do think it's meant to be raise a bit of a laugh. So I do think that Purna deals with these things. He's saying he's going to deal with them with humour. I think he's got a bit of a wry smile when he says all of this. But I also think it's about Purna's decision to disarm with maitri, to disarm with loving kindness, about doing the unexpected. You know, if people insult you, they're expecting a certain result. Well, what if you don't give them that result? What if you don't give them that response? What if you do something completely different? It sort of reminds me actually of my mother, who was being robbed once. And we call her the Catholic mystic of Brixton, my mother. And she turned around and she just said to the robber, oh, don't be naughty. Something along those lines, isn't it? And if he just went and backed off. My mum's full of doing things like that. Christ was the love. When she said to the next door who were dealing drugs, and she said, now, you know I'm not going to tell the police, but really this drug dealing has to stop. And it did. Anyway, lessons from the Catholic mystic of Brixton. Anyway, so Purna, this is what Purna does. It's this same sort of approach. He goes to Shravanaparantika, and on his first alms round, he meets a hunter. And the hunter looks at him and thinks, oh, this won't do. An ascetic in Shravanaparantika, this is very inauspicious. So he gets out his bow, draws his bow, and Purna goes... He says, well, if you're going to shoot anywhere, shoot here, because it's for the sake of my stomach that I've come to this cesspool of wickedness in order to beg for alms. And the hunter is just completely baffled and puts down his bow and thinks, well, I can't shoot someone like that. So he starts to listen to Purna, and Purna teaches him the Dharma. And we're told that the hunter takes refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And in this way, with humour and patience, he gathers a community of, we're told, 500 men, 500 women, and he builds 500 monasteries. Perhaps with two people each inside. One man, one woman. Anyway, it's not meant to make sense. So, yes. So through this activity, through reflecting on his dharma, the dharma that he was given by the Buddha, he gains enlightenment. But soon Purna longs to see the Buddha. He looks up at the night sky and he thinks of the Buddha and his disciples sitting under the same night sky in Shravasti, so far away. And he longs to just catch one glimpse of the Buddha again. Maybe he's thinking that before he dies, he'd like to see the Buddha again, to be in that presence, just to delight in that presence. So he asks the king's permission to invite the Buddha, and the king agrees. And together they turn Shronaparantaka into a pure land. They take away all the stones and gravel. They sprinkle the ground with sandalwood water. They cover the city in flowers. From every building they hang silk banners. And they leave no smell but the smell of incense. And Purna builds the Buddha a palace made out of the finest sandalwood for him to enter. And eventually, when everything is laid out, when everything is ready, Purna climbs onto the roof of the palace, or the Gandakuti, the fragrant chamber. And with both knees on the ground, he strews flowers into the wind. He blows incense into the wind to be blown towards Shravasti. So I think this is very interesting. Why would Purna want to see the Buddha so badly? After all, he's an enlightened being. And he's seen the Dharmakaya, he's seen the wisdom body of the Buddha. In the words of the Buddha, he who sees the Dharma sees me. Well, Purna has seen the Dharma, had insight into the Dharma, into the transcendental nature of reality. So why would he want to see the Buddha as Rupakaya? Why would he want to just be with the physical body of the Buddha? I mean, surely he's gone beyond all that.